So we are holding on Kuf Yud Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Okay, so we discussed yesterday, we mentioned in the Mishnah about that certain things that you're not allowed to drink on Shabbos, certain things you're not allowed to eat or drink, medicinal foods, medicinal drinks. We said if they're things that are eaten normally by healthy people, then you're allowed to, but not if they are things that are eaten only, that are eaten only for medicinal purposes. And we said one example of a thing like that you're not allowed to eat it, or drink rather, is koishal ikrin, is a cup of roots. Meaning we said you have a couple of different ingredients that we mentioned in the Gemara yesterday, which you mix with wine or with beer. We described yesterday what you do, that you mix all three of those ingredients with wine and give them to a woman who's suffering from ziva. And then that cures, it's one of 12 ways that we said in the Gemara of curing her. And it doesn't have the side effect of making her infertile. On the other hand, we said, that for a person who's suffering from jaundice, yerokin, where their skin turns yellow, then we said you take two of the three ingredients and mix them with beer, and it'll cure them, but it'll have the side effect of making them infertile. So now we're going to talk about that point, about how is that allowed? What are the dinim involved in making someone infertile? So the yarkoina trim b'shichrom yachar. We say that for jaundice, you give the person two out of the three ingredients. The pashas means any two out of the three. Mixed with beer, and it will have the side effect that it'll cure him, but it'll have the side effect of making him sterile. So the question is, Mishori, are you allowed to do that? How are you allowed to make a person sterile? We learn in a braisa. How do we know that you're not allowed to sterilize a person? So you have like this. The context is, the pasuk is talking about various mumim that pass all a carbon. Among them, the pasuk mentions ummo'uch v'chosus v'nosuch v'chorus, which are four things that could be done to the genitals, to the testicles, or to the aver, as the case may be. And the pasuk says you're not allowed to bring any animal that has any of those as a carbon. And then the pasuk finishes over outzechem loisasu, don't do it in your land. Now, what it means is Bachem loisasu, divrei Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina is telling us that the word of Arzachem, because the point is like this, it doesn't mean, now on the surface you might have understood it to mean, it means that you're only not allowed to do that in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe it means you're allowed to do it anywhere else in the world. The problem with that is, it can't be like that, because we have a general rule that anything which is choivas haguf, any mitzvah which is binding on the person themselves, is just as binding in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. Only there's mitzvahs at Tluyas Laaretz. There's certain mitzvahs that depend on the land. For example, Shmita, Trumas, Maisris, certain kinds of Kilayim, etc. And those apply only in Eretz Yisrael. So that's called mitzvahs at Tluyas Laaretz. And the rule is mitzvahs at Tluyas Laaretz, Midaraisa apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Some of them Midrabanan apply. Some of them you're abundant apply in certain parts of Chutz Laaretz, or maybe in all of Chutz Laaretz, as well as the case may be. But anyway, the point is, Sirus is not like that. Sirus has nothing to do with not being allowed to sterilize a person or an animal. It has nothing to do with the land. So therefore, it can't be a mitzvah that is applicable only in Eretz Yisrael. It must be, it's everywhere. So therefore, V'artzachem comes to teach us, therefore, anything that exists on the land, but even so then, it's sort of still could have said, Ba'aretz loisasu. So the V'artzachem, the Chaf Mem, adds, even in yourselves, Bachem loisasu. You're not allowed to sterilize yourselves either. Another way that Rashi, that's how Tosfos explains it. A different way Rashi explains is that instead we the word loisa'asu can also be read as if it was loisei'asu. You should not be made. So you should not be made sterile by having somebody do something. So the question is how you allowed to. Now, of course, you could answer that the things that mentions the pasuk or moach, pachosus, etc., refer only to actually doing an operation on the genitals or whatever. Maybe it's different if they're just drinking a potion, as in this case. But still, the point is that it still wouldn't be allowed under those grounds as well. Still, you're not allowed to sterilize. You're not allowed to sterilize a creature. Which, by the way, is very negay. When people have pets, for example, what you do as far as they usually spay or neuter them or whatever, it's pretty questioning. You know, halacha, you can't You can't really do that. One possibility you can do is you buy them, or you buy them from a girl. You already spayed and neutered. So then, yeah. Tosfos actually discusses the question over here. Is it that we're saying, maybe we're talking over here, he brings from Shiltus, maybe we're talking only according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says always, as we've had throughout the Masechta, Dovah She'enim Eskaven Osir. So even though, I mean, in this case, the guy is drinking the potion to cure him from jaundice, the fact that it makes him sterile is a side effect. It's a Dovah She'enim Eskaven. Maybe if we're talking about over here, it's Osir, maybe that would only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfos says no, even according to Rabbi Shimon, because it's secretion. It's inevitable it's going to cause sterility, and therefore you have the same problem. Anyway, so that's the question.
It's a dangerous one. It's running. That could be dangerous, right?
Well, you know, so we're not talking about ziva over here. We were talking about jaundice. So we're not talking about it with pekuach nefesh. If it was pekuach nefesh, obviously then he could take it. But then the Mishnah is telling us you can't take it on Shabbos. So the implication is on Shabbos you can't because of the gzeira d'rabbanan about taking medicine. But on weekdays you could. If it's a matter of serious, you can't do it on weekdays either. The answer is haninyule hecha bekomichavim. The difference is that maybe it's only osir. In fact, when you're actually doing something, when you're actually doing an operation on the actual genitals, hacham le'atzmi, we hear it's something that happens on its own. The guy is taking this potion, and it causes them to become infertile. As we have an example, the Amar Rav Yechanan, haroitza she yisaris tanago, if a person wants to castrate, to sterilize a rooster, yitel karbaltoi, he can accomplish that by taking off the comb of the rooster, the comb that's on top of the head over there, almost out of snail, and automatically it becomes sterilized. So you see, therefore, apparently from what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that you are allowed to do things as long as you're not actually touching the actual evrei hazera, the actual genitals, then it sounds like you're allowed to do things, even though they're going to have that effect. So the same thing, by the same logic over here, you should be allowed to drink a kosher ikrin, even though it'll have the effect of making him infertile, because it's not directly touching. However, the Gemara says no. Because don't you know, Rav Ashi said that in the case of the rooster, it's not that the lack of the comb physically prevents it from being able to mate and whatever. What it is it's proud of its comb. Romus rucha means pride. Hudanakitale is grabbing a hold of it. Meaning the rooster is very proud of its comb, and when the comb is removed, like now it's depressed, now it's dejected, and therefore it doesn't feel like mating anymore. Not that it's physically incapable of, it just doesn't feel like doing it anymore. So therefore it's not the same thing. So you could say, okay, if you do something to somebody that makes them depressed, then they're not interested in having relations, then fine, maybe you'd be allowed to do that, but not the post-proliferant, which actually makes them infertile. El of the stories. So okay, maybe we're going to answer that you're right. When the Mishnah is implying that you're allowed to drink a kosher ikrin on weekdays, and the problem is only on Shabbos, maybe it's talking about the person is already a soris. The person is already sterile, which there can be two kinds. There's one kind called Swiss Chama, where he was born infertile, and you have in the Gemara in Yevamos discusses, mentions various simonim that the person has. Basically a Swiss Chama, it's called, basically in modern terms, it could be there's some abnormality with their chromosomes, or it could be they have low testosterone, or whatever it is, their body doesn't develop like a normal man's body does. Chama literally means heat, because whether the Gemara mentions that one thing that can cause it is if the baby was exposed to too much heat in the womb. Whatever it is, the point is that the Gemara mentions of it, a various simonim of it. The person that doesn't grow pubic hair and other body hair, he doesn't grow a beard, his voice stays high, his skin is soft, etc., etc. So that's one kind. And then you have Swiss Adam, where you have like the Goyim used to do, maybe they still do in some places nowadays, where they sterilize people, they remove the testicles or they whatever, and yeah. Anyway. So maybe we're talking about that. The guy is already a sorist, therefore maybe he's allowed to drink a kosher liquid, because it can't make him any more infertile than it already, and he already is. No, the Gemara says that doesn't work either. Now like this, you have a machloikis in Bechoris. We know that there's an Isser Midaraisa to make a mum in Kodshim. A Bechor is Kodshim. I mean, nowadays also, it's, you know, even though we don't have a Beis Mikdash, the Bechor is still Kodshim. You have to wait until either the Beis Mikdash is going to be rebuilt, or you wait until the Bechor develops a Mum, and then it's Kodshim Bali Mumim, and then you're able to Shecht it. But you're not allowed to make a Mum in it. So now what happens, though, in Bechorus, it talks about the case. What happens if the Bechor is suffering from, it's called Sha'och Zedam, it means it was seized by blood. Maybe it means high blood pressure, maybe it means some other kind of thing. The point is, you have to let blood, you have to take out some blood from it, otherwise it's going to die from that. So you have a machloikus over there. Are you allowed to do that? And if you are, does it have to have to be in a place that won't make a mum? You have one opinion that says you're not allowed to at all because you may come to do it in a place where there's a mum. Another opinion that you can do it as long as you don't make a mum. And a third opinion, I think Rav Shimon says, Rav Shimon, who says, Dov Hashem, Skaven is Mutter, says you're even allowed to do it in a place where it might make a mum because it's not Psik Resha. Anyway, the point is, so even though you have that machloikus, where in this case, in effect, the animal already has a mum because it already has this high blood pressure or whatever, and that's right now, that prevents it from being brought as a korban. So at the moment, that counts as a mum in effect. And now you're going to be making another mum in it, conceivably. And you have this machlokas whether you're allowed to. However, hakol mogim, everybody agrees, the mechametz acha mechametz, that if a korban mincha, a korban mincha has to be kept non-chametz, but if you have any of the activities that are done with that mincha, if they're done while it's chametz, even one person, let's say, for example, one person kneaded it as chametz and another person shaped it and another person baked it, each one of them is going to be true chayev, each one of them is going to be chayev malchus for it. Shenema loisei ofer chametz, loisei ofer chametz, because you have two psukim. One says that a korban mincha should not be baked as chametz, and the other one, it should not be made as chametz. Now, baking is one of the things that you do in making bread. Is it one of the steps is baking. So therefore, it's one of these examples of Dover Shahoya Baklal, the Yotzim in Aklal Lalamid, where we say that it was part of a klal and singled out in the Pasuk. Lo Lalamid al-Atzma Yotzim al-Lalamid al-Aklal Kula Yotzim. It comes to teach us about the whole klal. Just like there's a separate issue in the Torah for baking it as chametz, because it explicitly says Lo Yotzim al-Aklal chametz. The same thing. There's an individual lab for each of the other steps that might be done with the mincha. So that's what we're saying. So for example, so one person needs, so if it was made chametz and one person needed it, then he's going to be chayiv malchus. It doesn't say kneading in the pasuk, but it says baking, and we learn from that lalamad al klal kula yotza that every activity involved in it is also in his chayiv malchus. Yeah, another way of understanding this mechametz acha mechametz, by the way, is that Amnon puts it, is that let's say one person puts chametz, let's say one person puts sourdough into the mincha, and another person comes and puts some more in, then the second person is still going to be chayiv. Apparently, Rashi doesn't understand that way. Rashi would understand, look, once it's chametz already, so he would understand that it's talking dafka about different activities. Anyway, also, and here's what's relevant to our subject, the misaris acha misaris shulchayev. Also, if you sterilize an animal or a person after it was already sterile, then you're also chayev shenema, because the pasuk lists over there four things that could have been done with the beitzim. Mo'uch v'chosus v'nosuch v'chorus. Mo'uch means that they were squashed. Chosus, that they were chopped up. Nosuch means they were pulled away. V'chorus and cut. So Rashi over here understands that kodesh is actually less severe, sort of, than noisik. Noisik, whatever, would be where they're actually pulled completely loose, where the beitzim are actually pulled completely loose from the cords that they hang from. So they're still inside. They're still inside the sac. They're still inside the scrotum, but they're completely detached from the body, from the blood vessel, from the blood vessels and from the ducts and whatever that they hang from, that they're attached to. As opposed to chorus would be that those ducts were cut, but not necessarily completely. That maybe some of them were cut and some of them were not. Like you have, for example, nowadays when they do a vasectomy, let's say. So that's how Rashi learns over here. Rashi learns that nosuk would be where you take out the basin completely and take them completely out of the scrotum, as opposed to chorus, they were cut off but they're still in there. On the pasuk, Rashi explains it a little differently, and Tosfos also over here says that it means more like what I was just saying, which I mistakenly said was Rashi, is that chorus means that they're a little bit cut, and nosuk means they're completely ripped off, but in both cases they're still actually there inside the pouch. Whatever the case, the point is, since the pasuk mentions that ima chorus chayev al nosuk leitolshkin, now we have to ask if you even chayev malchus for doing chorus, which is less serious because it involves only cutting them but still leaving them in there, or only cutting some of the ducts but not all of them. Al nosuk like Tolshkin, how much more so you be chayev for nosuk, which means according to actually removing them completely, or according to Tosfos cutting them off completely but still leaving them in there. Ela Lahavi Nosik Achakoris Shulchayim. It comes to teach us that even, let's say, one person did Kodis and another person did Nosik, the second person is still going to be Chayim. I, Kodis, was enough already to make the animal in total. Doesn't matter. The second person is still Chayim for doing his part. So again, if we're talking about a Swiss over here, then it has to still be the same thing. Yes, he's already a Saris. He's already in Fodal, but you're still not allowed to do another thing. You're still not allowed to do a Maisa to make him to, that would make him in Fodal. That would make him in Fodal. As Ella Bezokin. So maybe we can answer, maybe the missionary is saying that it would be allowed for an old person, an old man anyway, can't have children. So therefore, maybe he'd be allowed to drink a Kos Cholik. The Gemara says, no, No, because Rabbi Yochanan said when he was old that he took, there were certain medicines and certain remedies that are mentioned in the Gemara in Gittin in the beginning of the seventh parak there. You have a long sugya that goes for like a blot and a half that go with different kinds of cures and remedies and whatever. And one of them is for a person who doesn't have the ability to get erect and have relations. And Rabbi Yochanan says over there that it actually worked for me. I was old and I took this particular remedy that I mentioned in the Gemara over there and it worked. I had my koyach gabra again. So we see even an old person is able sometimes to have children again. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, look at Sarah, you know, she laughed and said, how could Abraham have children when he's old? And the fact is after that, he had not only Yitzchak, he had six more children with Torah. Now, Ella Be'isha. So we have to answer, therefore, the Mishnah must be talking about a woman. Now, why is there no issue with a woman? Rashi explains, because a woman is not Litzuva in Piriya Verivya. So therefore, the whole concept of that you're not allowed to sterilize does not apply to women. Another way, there's a couple of other ways of looking at it among Rishonim. One of them is that it is true that it doesn't apply to women, but the reason is different. The reason is because the psukim, again, we're learning it from the pasuk umoach v'chosus, etc., which are all talking about things that are done to a male animal. Therefore, we don't have a source to say that it should apply to women or female animals as well. Then you have another way of looking at it, which is the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rambam learned it is fine. It's not an isur daraisa to do it to women or to female animals, but it is an isur d'rabban. So according to them, we would have to say, okay, it's an Isser D'Rabbanon to do something directly. Here, it's not as direct, because after all, it's a kosher liquid, it's a potion, it's not actually doing an operation. But no, and we said before it is, so that's the Tosfos, it said before, it's Sikuresha. But nevertheless, there is, you know, at least over here, where she's taking it because of Yerokin, because of jaundice, you know, so there's a medical need for it, so maybe. There are, for example, a number of Trovas from Ramosha on these kinds of questions of when you might be allowed to do something to sterilize a woman. He has various cases over there. One of them is a woman was having deformed children, and he said that's not a valid enough reason for her to be able to do that. It's not a threat to her health. Another one was it would be the doctor said it would be dangerous for her to get pregnant, but Moshe says okay, but you still don't have to go as far as sterilizing her, tying her tubes or whatever, or a hysterectomy or whatever. Let her have relations with her husband using a diaphragm or something to block her from getting pregnant. Then there's another one where there was no choice. None of those other methods were going to work for this particular woman. So then Rav Moshe says, fine, in that case, given that, according to many Rishonim, it's not an issue at all, and only according to some Rishonim is an issue that I've done, and then fine, we can be mocked to it in a case like that. So that's a case-by-case thing. But anyway, okay. The Gemara says, what about Rav Yechon ben Breuka? Okay, but how does that work then, according to Rav Yechon ben Breuka? He learns that the mitzvah of Pru Avu applies to both men and women, because Hashem addresses it to both Adam and Chava, Vayvarach Oysam Elikim. So my Iklamem, according to him, what are you going to say? According to him, then the issue of Sirus, of sterilization, should apply to women as well. The answer is Biskeno. You're talking about when the woman is old. We're there, okay, you know, it's not, again, first of all, given that it's not really the same act of Sirus, it's not really the same kind of thing that you're doing. There's no actual operation over there, and it's not the same parts that I mentioned in the Pesukim Umoach Bechosus, etc. Plus the fact that Derech HaTeva, an old woman, is not going to be able to have children again once she hits menopause. It would take a nest for her to have children again, like Sarah, as opposed to a man. You know, fine. He may need some of that stuff that Rabbi Yochanan used or whatever the modern equivalents are, but it's still possible with Derech HaTeva. So therefore, so with her, there's less of an issue of her taking a sterilizing potion, given that she's already old anyway. Inami bakara, or another possibility is where she's already infertile anyway. Again, Tosfos says, given that the whole concept of sirus doesn't really apply as much to women as it does to men, because they have different parts, then therefore we can be more maypole, as we said before, with a sirus, with a man, we can't be maypole to allow him to take, but with a woman, we could. Well, the answer is the Gemara says over there that the Chachamim would answer that that's a bracha that was given to Adam and Chava. The mitzvah, pruavu, was given only to Adam because the pasuk says over there, the pruavu, milosar, v'chibshuha, and dominate the world, conquer and dominate the world. And they have the famous expression, ish da'ke l'kabish, only men conquer, women don't. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on this topic of taking medications on Shabbos, hachoshish b'shinav, the Mishnah says, a person who has a toothache, lo yigamea behenes achoymetz, he's not allowed to swallow vinegar, which the idea would be, he puts vinegar in his mouth, switches it around, and that helps. The vinegar, as we said yesterday, helps close up the blood vessels, and therefore it helps relieve the gum ache or toothache or whatever it is. So he's not allowed to do that again because you don't usually do that on weekdays, and therefore it's obvious that he's doing it for Rapura. Abel metabol hukadakri, but he's allowed to dip bread into vinegar and eat it the normal way that you would. Then the strapa, and if that heals him, then good. It's a side effect, basically, and he's not doing anything different that people would usually do on weekdays, and therefore it's allowed. We're going to talk about in the Gemara about spitting out versus swallowing. Another case, hachoshish b'mosnav, if a person has pain in his hips, lo yosuch yayin v'chaymetz, he's not allowed to smear on them wine and vinegar, because again, people only do that when they're not feeling well, so then it would be a matter of obvious refuah, and you have the same old problem that he may come to grind up spices for medicines on Shabbos. Abel socho is hashemen, but he is allowed to smear on them regular oil. But because people do that on weekdays as well, in those times, it was very common. People smeared oil on their skin to soften their skin, and a sunscreen, and then as cleanser, and lots of other things. You asked me that yesterday. The answer is that there's a difference between oil, which is thin, and, for example, a lotion, which is thick. A lotion, which is thick, you have a problem of the malacha of mimareach, of smoothing out, like you'd be smoothing out a skin to make leather out of it. But when it's a thin consistency, like oil, then there's no problem.
Which oil?
Just regular olive oil, but regular olive oil or other stuff. But the just smear it on the skin. Yeah, but veloy shemen verin, but not rose oil, meaning oil that roses were preserved in, because that kind people only use since it's very expensive. People only use it if they need it for medical purposes, and therefore you're back to the problem of medication on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah. B'nei Melachim Sochin Shemen Vered Amakasehen. Now, princes, kings' sons, are allowed to smear rose oil on their wounds on Shabbos. Shekein Dauken Losach B'chol, because on weekdays as well they do it, even if they don't have wounds, because they're rich. They're rich and they're pampered and they can afford that kind of thing. Famous expression of Shimon Omer Kol Yisrael. B'nei Melachim Shimon says that all Jewish people are princes, all Jewish people are sons of kings, and therefore if it's mutter for princes, then it has to be mutter for everybody. We'll see in the Gemara whether the halacha is like it. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Rami le Rav Acha Aricha, dehu Rav Acha bar Papa le Rav Abahu. Rav Acha Aricha, which means the tall one, who was also Rav Acha bar Papa, so his real name was Rav Acha bar Papa, but they called him Rav Acha Aricha because he was tall. Anyway, he asked a question to Rav Abahu. He pointed out to Rav Abahu a contradiction. Shnam, we learn in our Mishnah, Hachoshish B'shinav lo yigamea behenes hachoymetz, was saying that if a person has a toothache, he's not allowed to swallow vinegar because the vinegar is going to help his teeth. The question is, are you telling me that vinegar is good for your teeth? It's interesting. Usually in the Gemara, when we have a reminhu, it's usually from a mishnah to a braisa, from one mishnah to another one. It's not very often we bring a contradiction from a pasuk. You have a pasuk in Mishlei that says, like vinegar for the teeth, or like smoke to the eyes, so it is harmful. The pasuk finishes off, so it's like if you send a lazy person to do a job for you, it's harmful for you, because he's not going to do the job, and you expected him to, and you're going to end up worse off than you were if you hadn't sent him in the first place. And the point is, the pasuk is saying vinegar is very bad for your teeth. And that's the comparison. So what do you mean the Mishnah is saying that vinegar is good for your teeth? The answer is, like Kasha, There's a difference between the acid of the fruit versus vinegar. Meaning, Rashi explains, you can have wine that didn't fully mature in the grapes. So let's say, for example, it could be that the grapes were picked when they're not fully ripe, and then you have the juice in them is more acidic. It's not sweet enough yet. It could be, we're talking about when you're first pressing the grapes and it hasn't actually turned into wine yet. It's still grape juice. Whatever it is, then it's sharp and acidic, and then that's the kind that's not good for your teeth. That's the kind that Shlomo HaMelech is talking about in Mishlei. That's like sending a lazy person on a job. As opposed to vinegar, is what our Mishnah is talking about. Wine that was made and then it turned sour and became vinegar. That kind is fine for you. That kind is good for your teeth. The boys say mahalbahalbachala. Another answer is that both of them are talking about vinegar. Both the Pasuk and the Mishnah are talking about vinegar. But the difference is haldeikamaka, haldelekamaka. There's a difference whether he has a wound, whether he has a sore on his gums or something. If there's a sore there, then the vinegar helps heal it, because again, what it does, it helps close up the blood vessels, so therefore it stops the bleeding. Lekamaka merapi, but if there's no sore over there, if there's no sore on the gums, then it's bad for your teeth, because then what it does is it causes, it actually explains, then what it does is, if we're saying that it shrinks the flesh and the blood vessels, then therefore it's going to make the teeth come loose. Because now there's going to be less room for them in the gum, basically. So that would be the difference. So Shlomo HaMelech is talking about when you don't have gum disease, then vinegar is bad for you. And the Mishnah is talking about when you do have gum disease, and then vinegar is good for you. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to swallow vinegar in order to make your teeth or your gums feel better. So the question, we learn in a Braisa, you're not allowed to gargle it and spit it out, because then you're obviously doing it for refuah, but you are allowed to swallow it, and you are allowed to, gamea means like he puts it in his mouth and then starts swallowing it, like gargling it, and actually swallow it so it goes down into his stomach. So you are allowed to. So why is the Mishnah telling us that not? The answer is Omar Abai, you're right. Our Mishnah is actually talking about where he's swallowing it, but not completely. He's just gargling it. He's putting it in his throat and gargling and swishing it around in his mouth and then spitting it out. That would be also because he's obviously doing it for refuah. Not really gargling. It's not really in his throat. We're talking about, let's say, he's swishing it around in his mouth. As opposed to if he swallows it, then that would be fine. Because then sometimes during the week also, people sometimes drink vinegar in order to whet their appetite. Rava says you don't even need to say that. You could even say that our Mishnah is saying that you're not allowed to swallow it down. But the difference is, kam lefnei tibul, kam la'achar tibul. The difference is that we're talking about whether before you're eating or after you're eating. Tibul means eating, and the reason is because in those days, whenever they ate, they always dipped their food in something. You know, we have manashtanish. So in those, in all other meals, we're not even required to dip one time, but practically speaking, they would. In general, when they ate their food, they would dip it in some kind of dip first. So therefore, the meal itself is called tibul. So if you're taking the vinegar before the meal, so yes, you're doing it for a toothache, but the fact of the matter is it's not obvious to you or to anybody, let alone to any, it's not obvious to anybody else that you're doing it for a refuah, because sometimes people do that. They drink a little bit of vinegar in order to stimulate their appetite. As opposed to after the meal, you don't need to stimulate your appetite, so then you're obviously doing it for a refuah. Okay. The Gemara asks, how could that be? V'neima midilifnei tibul shari la'achar tibul nami shari. Why shouldn't we say, how could you have that? You can't have something that's also for half of Shabbos and mutter for half of Shabbos. So if it's allowed before the meal, then it should be to swallow, even to swallow it, then it should be allowed after the meal as well. So how can Rava say that? And we know, Disham Inin Leila Rava, in fact, we find Rava himself holds of such a concept. De'is Lehoyu, Rava holds of the concept. Once something is mutter, then it has to be mutter. Once something is mutter on a certain day, then it has to be mutter for all that day. Namely, De'Amar Rava, you have like this. The Gemara in Beitza talks about like this. You're not allowed to tovo kelim on Yom Tov, on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. And it's midrabbanan. It's called tik, right? It's related to makabata. It's called tikun kli. Like you're fixing the keli and making it usable. Whether it's, you know, you bought it for the first time from a goy, whether it's like it was tome and you're tovoing it so you can use it with tome, etc. Whatever. The point is that you're being a sack in it. Before it wasn't usable and now it is. But on the other hand, the question, can a person tovel on Shabbos? So Rava says over there, yes, because with a person, even though, yes, they're being mistaken themselves, they're making themselves and now tahor, but on the other hand, it's not obvious that they're doing it for that purpose. It could just be you are hot and you want it to cool off. So that applies to Shabbos. So the Gemara discusses over there. So what would Rava say on Yom Kippur, where you're not allowed to bathe for pleasure? Then you can't say if the person is going to the mikveh, he's doing it just because he's hot and he wants to cool off. So then what are you going to say? And the answer is, Rava says, listen, there's no such thing that is mutter on Shabbos as on the grounds of Malacha and also on Yom Kippur. You have eating and drinking, etc., also on Yom Kippur, fine, but those aren't a matter of Malacha. Those are the special Yinuyim of Yom Kippur. But within Malacha, you don't have any within Malacha or within Zedus Drabanan of Malacha, there's no such thing. So if you're allowed to on Shabbos, you have to be allowed to on Yom Kippur as well. The Chum wouldn't have made such a Zedah. So at the Amar Rava, Lekha Midi to Shabbos Shori of Yom Kippur Masu. Rava says there's no such thing. That's mutter on Shabbos and also on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur's Kedusha is less than Shabbos. That's why, for example, we have 6 aliyahs on Yom Kippur and 7 on Shabbos. Therefore, hoyil, so he says, since the B'Shabbos Shari, since it's mutter to tovel on Shabbos, on the grounds that it looks like you're just cooling off, the Yom Kippur and Nami Shari, then it must be mutter on Yom Kippur as well. So we see that Rava holds of that concept, that we say hoyil. So why don't we say over here the same thing? Once it's mutter to drink the vinegar before the meal, it should be mutter after the meal as well. The answer is, hodabe Rava mehach. The answer is, as a matter of fact, Rava changed his mind in our Gemara over here and took back his answer about that there's a difference between before and after the meal and accepted Abaye's answer that there's a difference between swishing it around and spitting it out versus swallowing. No, so that's the thing. Rava tried that explanation, but we said that won't work with Rava's own principle of hoyo. So we're saying, you're right, Rava changed his mind and said, on the grounds of hoyo, we would have to allow him both before and after the meal if it was a matter of swallowing it. However, to spit it out, like that would be, when is the Mishnah saying it's also, would be like a buyer when if he's spitting it out.
Generally,
before or after. Right. Okay. So the question is, how do you know that Rava changed his mind on the statement over here? Maybe Rava changed his mind over there and said you're not allowed to tovel on Yom Kippur. The answer is lois tachadai. If you can't think that way, to Tanya, as we actually learn in the Brisa, kocha yobitzvilas tovel kedavkon ben b'tesva ben yom kippur. Anybody who's chayev to tovel is allowed to tovel normally on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. So Rava can't contradict the Braisa. So he can't take that back and say you can't tovel on Yom Kippur after all. It must be that when you chayev tovel. So it must be that he actually holds that indeed of hoyle. And that means in our case of a hue, if you're going to swallow the vinegar, then once it's allowed before the meal, it has to be allowed after the meal as well. So he has to accept the Abaye's explanation. Now, what does that mean? Nowadays? Now, first of all, Tosfos points out, the Gemara does mention over there in Beitza a couple of other possible reasons why you might not be allowed to tovel a keli on Shabbos, but you might be allowed to tovel yourself. One of them is that you might carry the keli for Amos and Rosh Hashanah, which would apply on Yom Kippur as well. Okay, but still, Tosfos says that we have Rava's explanation, and we have Rava's explanation over there, We have two different statements of Rava's over there that we're not gonna flip around two of them. We're not gonna say he changed his mind on two things on the grounds of in order to make the one over here still stand. So better to say the one over here, it's only one, so therefore he changed his mind. Now what is it nowadays? Nowadays we never heard of anybody toveling on Yom Kippur or on Tisha B'Av. So first of all, for men, it's not for men. Nowadays, we're not toveling because we're required to. We're toveling as a minhag, and a minhag obviously can't override the halacha of not toveling on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. What about women? So you have a few different considerations involved over here. First of all, Tosfos discusses them over here. First of all, you have a machloikas in the Gemara in a few places, whether tvila bismana mitzvah or not. Is there, when a woman has to tovel, is there a mitzvah, or a man for that matter, when men kept tumah v'tahara, is there a mitzvah to actually tovel on the first day that you have the opportunity to, or does it not matter, you can tovel whenever you want afterwards? So if we say tvila bismana, lav mitzvah, then anyway, you don't have any grounds to tovel on Yom Kippur or on Tisha B'Av, just tovel the next day. But you have other considerations also, Tosfos points out. Nowadays, anyway, when women tovel, they're not toveling on the day they're supposed to anyway, because on a daraisa level, you're usually only going to have, they're keeping more days because of the various chumras, because of the chumra, the rabzeira, about keeping the day, about treating a nida as if she was a zava, and the chumra that we have awaiting the extra 5 days and so forth. So it anyway comes out she's not toveling on the day that she should have toveled on a daraisa level anyway. So therefore, we can't override Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur for it. The fact that you want to be matir who have relations with her husband, you can't have relations with Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur anyway, so she might as well wait until the next night. Also, Tosfos quotes from a line from a Gemara in Tainis that said from Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohen, as far as Tisha B'Av, who says, you know what, the Beis Mikdash is worth losing Tefillah 1 day a year for. So even if we hold Tefillah B'Zman HaMitzvah and all that, nevertheless, you know, come on, the Avelos of the Beis Mikdash is important enough to override that. So for those various reasons, we don't have that we don't actually apply this din nowadays that you're allowed to tovel on Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur. Next, we said in the Mishnah, anyway, so the bottom line is, again, so Rava's explanation about the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa, that one's talking about where you're swallowing the vinegar before the meal, and that's mutter, and the other one's talking about where you're swallowing it after the meal, and that's also, that doesn't stand. We slugged that up. We said Rava himself changed his mind about that. Therefore, we're left with Abaye's explanation that whether before or after the meal, you're allowed to swallow it, but you're not allowed to swish it around and spit it out. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Choshesh B'Masnav, we said if a person is having pain in his hips or his waist or whatever, so we said he's allowed to smear regular oil on it, but not rose oil. And then we said, Rav Shimon says, Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Heim, and since princes are allowed to use rose oil, then so is anybody else. So, Amar Rav Abba Bar Zavga, Amar Rav Halacha K'Rav Shimon. So, the Halacha is like Rav Shimon, you can use rose oil. The question is, L'member of the Rav K'Rav Shimon, Sphere of Life. So you're telling me that Rav holds like Rav Shimon when it comes to dinim of Shabbos, which we've had so far in the Masechta, a number of machloikas in between Rav Shimon and other Tanoim, usually Rav Yehuda, where if you're going to so now we're going to bring a question from a different din that Rav Shimon says. So Rashi explains it's just that. Why are we assuming that Rab holds like Rav Shimon when we see, when it comes to a different kula regarding Shabbos, that he does not hold like Rav Shimon? And in fact, we're showing him the Ramban talks about, the Baal HaMor talks about various possibilities. If the Gemara had the Kabbalah that Rav never holds like Rav Shimon in Hilchos Shabbos, and therefore, if we see in another case where he clearly says not like Rav Shimon, then we're entitled to say not here either. Or maybe that this is the most makel thing that Rav Shimon says in Hilchos Shabbos, this one about Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Heim. And if Rav doesn't accept even that, if Rav doesn't accept even the more chumradic ones, then for sure he's not going to accept this one. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that the thing we're going to quote over here has directly to do with the matter of Dov Hashein Miskaven. We're going to quote over here something about Dov Hashein Miskaven. And say that Rav says it's also, which is not like Rav Shimon. And Tosfos says that connects with our matter of not using rose oil. If we say that Dov Hashein Miskaven is also, then automatically because of that, you wouldn't be allowed to use rose oil because you're not meaning for refuah. You're meaning because you're Ben Melech, you're a prince, and therefore you're using rose oil like they would. It has a refuah side effect, doesn't matter. So therefore, the Gemara is going to ask, according to Tosfos, then the question is, if we see that Rav does not hold like Rav Shimon in Dov Hashein Miskaven, then how can he hold over here like him when it's also Dov Hashein Miskaven? Okay. Namely, Va'amr Rav Shimon Bar Chia Mishmed Rav, Haim Sukaria Denizaisa, the stopper around the faucet on a barrel, meaning, in other words, Rashi describes like this, you make a hole in a wine barrel or whatever kind of barrel, which is made out of earthenware, and you attach a faucet to it to be able to get out wine or oil or whatever it is whenever you want. But inevitably, when you're making a hole, it's impossible to make it perfectly round that it'll fit the faucet so precisely. So you have to put in, like nowadays, you would use cork around it. So in those times, they would squeeze in a piece of cloth around it to fill up the gap so the wine doesn't leak out around the faucet. So that kind of thing, Rav says, also la haduka You're not allowed to put it back in place into the hole on Yom Tov or Shabbos because you have an issur of schita. Because you have an issur, Rashi explains, of you're not allowed to squeeze out a cloth of the liquid in it. And here, inevitably, it absorbs liquid. Here it absorbs liquid. And when you put it in there, you're going to be squeezing it out. And therefore, that would be also. Now it's davar she'ein miskaven, because you're not intending to squeeze out the liquid. You're just intending to stick it tightly into the hole over there. And we're still, to close up the barrel, and we're still saying it's also. So we see Rav doesn't hold like Rav Shimon in davar she'ein miskaven. So what are you telling me then? Again, so according to many of the Rishonim, we're just asking, if we see that Rav does not hold like Rav Shimon in that, then it means he doesn't hold like Rav Shimon in other areas of Hilchos Shabbos either, including our Mishnah. Or, according to Tosfos' way, it means, given that he says that Dovah Shein Miskaven is also, or our Mishnah is also a case of Dovah Shein Miskaven, why is he saying that it's Mutter? Why is he saying Halacha like Rav Shimon? Schita and Yom Tov is also, yeah. Because it's not a Malacha Sechel Nefesh. But with that said, though, Tosfos actually gets into a discussion here, and also in Ksubas, and also in a couple of other places, of exactly what the Malacha is that would be the problem. Is it schita, or is it maybe the malacha of malabin, that you're cleaning the cloth because you're getting the liquid out of it? Tosfos says it would be malabin if the liquid in the barrel was water, because that means you're squeezing out water from the cloth, you're making it cleaner. But if you have other kinds of liquids in there, then it wouldn't be malabin, because you're not getting any cleaner by squeezing out some of the wine that's in the cloth. But then you would have the issue of schita, which is a tolda of the malacha of dosh, that you're taking something out of its container, basically. It was embedded in the cloth over there, and like this, yeah.
Put it before Shabbos.
What? Well, if you put it in before Shabbos, obviously there's no problem. But we're saying on Yom Tov or Shabbos itself, you'd be awesome. Right. No, well, what you do with Pashtus is, I mean, I guess the idea is, you know, if the idea is that you're keeping this around the faucet, most of the time you're not going to take out the faucet itself on Shabbos or Yom Tov. You'd leave the faucet in place. You'd leave the cloth wrapped around it to cork up the hole, then you just open up. You'd open up the faucet or whatever. Yeah, I don't know if they may have had valves in those days. I don't know.
They could breathe. You fit exactly on and don't.
Yeah, okay. Even so, I mean, listen. Yeah. You know, you see in plumbing, for example, they still corked when you have pipes go together, right? So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, so the point is, So again, so the question is, if Rav doesn't hold like Rav Shimon, then why is he saying you're allowed, why is he saying here the halacha is like Rav Shimon and you're allowed to use rose oil on Shabbos? The answer is that's not a proof. In that case, even Rav Shimon would agree that it's also that by Rav Adami Tavai murdered Rav Shimon Psikresha Velayamas. We know Rav Shimon agrees by Psikresha. Here with the cloth, it's inevitable that you're going to squeeze out some liquid from it. So therefore, even Rav Shimon would have to agree that it would be also. By the way, the Aruch has a bit of a different explanation of this Misukarius the Nezaisa, because we've talked about before, Tosfos mentioned that the Aruch holds that even a Psik Reisha is not necessarily also if it's Psik Reisha Deloy Nichale, if he doesn't want the side effect of the Psik Reisha. Over here, he doesn't want liquid to be squeezed out of the cloth. He doesn't care about that one way or the other. So the Aruch explains that from a Sokaria Dinizaisa, this thing that we're saying you're not allowed to attach on tightly, is more like a cover over, is more like a cloth that goes as a stopper on the barrel. And the point is, if you squeeze it out, any wine or whatever that comes out of it is going right back into the barrel. Therefore, you want it to go out back into the barrel, so you have more wine in the barrel. Therefore, it's not Sokaria Dinizaisa. Right, but the point is, if you're squeezing it in order to stick it in, then gravity is going to make that any wine that drips out of it is going to go into the barrel. Yeah, a little bit might come out the top, but not very much. Most of it is going to come out the bottom. Yeah. Speaking of, by the way, I forgot to mention before when we were talking about Siros and we were discussing the question of Behoda or Shimon, which one would say that it's also, what about the fact that it's a Psikresha de la Nichalei over there also? He doesn't want to become sterile. So according to the Aruch's definition, it should be allowed. So the Rosh explains, because this concept that Psikresha de la Nichalei is Mutter applies only by Shabbos. By other dinim in the Torah, fine, we can say that Dovashay Miskaven might be Mutter, but not Psikresha. But if it's even, whether it's Psikresha de Nichalei or not, by other Isurim in the Torah, such as Sirus, it would still apply. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the question is, okay, so fine. So we don't have a contradiction from that statement of Rab, but that we find that Rab says explicitly that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, as far as Dovah Shein Miskaven. Rav Chanan bar Ami Amar Shmuel halacha could have Shimon. Rav Chanan bar Ami says in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Dovah Shein Miskaven is Mutter. Meanwhile, Rav Chiyah bar Ovin learned a third version of it without the second generation that are quoting in the name of Rav and Shmuel, but just with the names of Rav and Shmuel themselves, Rav Amalach Kerab Yehuda, Shmuel Amalach Kerab Shimon. So we see clearly that Rav holds Dov Hashanah Meskaven is also like Rav Yehuda. So again, how can he be holding like Rav Shimon in our Mishnah? Either, again, if he doesn't hold it like him in that, he can't be holding like him in other areas of Hilchos Shabbos as well, because they had a Kabbalah that he holds like him in all or nothing, or that he holds like him all, in maybe in, you know, if he doesn't even hold like him in the most Kolodika case, then not in the other ones. Or, as Tosfos says, because our case over here, the rose oil is itself Dovah Sheni Meskaven, doesn't mean for Rafur necessarily. Anyway, so how can you say, so how can he be saying the Halacha is like Rav Shimon? Ela Omer Rava. So no, Rava says like this, Ani Va'arish V'chavura Targimah. I and one of the lions among the Talmud Chachamim explained what Rav meant. And the Gemara interjects, who is this Arisha Bachabura? Umanu Rav Chiya Ba'ovin. Halacha Rav Shimon V'lav Mitaimei. Yes, Rav is saying Halacha like Rav Shimon, but not on the same grounds as Rav Shimon is saying as Mutter. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? My Halacha Rav Shimon V'lav Mitaimei. What do you mean by that? Ilema Halacha Rav Shimon Deshari. Do you mean, yes, the Halacha is like Rav Shimon, that you're allowed to use rose oil? The lav mitaimei, but it's not based on Rav Shimon's reason, the either Rav Shimon sava masi, but Rav sava loy masi. Namely, you might say, Rav Shimon would say, even though rose oil has healing properties, nevertheless, you're allowed to use it on Shabbos because princes use it even during the week, even when they don't have wounds, and Kohi Srov name a name. And Rav would say, you know what? Rose oil anyway doesn't heal you. So therefore, there's no problem using it on Shabbos any more than any other kind of oil. So maybe you would say that. Can't be. We say in the Mishnah that princes are allowed to put rose oil on their wounds. Obviously that means that it actually has healing properties. So you can't say that's what Rav means. No, it means halacha could have Shimon Deshari, the lav mitaimei. It means, yes, Rav Shimon is saying it's mutter, but not when Rava and Rav Chiya Ba'ovin are saying that Rav is saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon, but not on the grounds that Rav Shimon says it. What we mean is like this. The ear of Rav Shimon sava afagab le shchiyach shari. Rav Shimon would say that even though rose oil is not commonly found, even though it's expensive, nevertheless it's mutter because Kohi Yisrael b'nei Malach name. Whereas the Tanakhama would hold that not, the Tanakhama would hold that because it's expensive and people use it only for refuah, therefore it would be usur. The Rav Sava, Rav says it's not necessarily a blanket thing. If it's a place where it's cheaply available, then it's mutter. If not, then not. Over asur the Rav, shchiach mishcha devarda. In Rav's particular area, rose oil was more easily available. It wasn't this kind of expensive luxury good that only princes use. Therefore, Rav is saying, in a place like that, you're allowed to use it on Shabbos because it's something that anybody can easily buy. It's not much more expensive. It's not much more expensive than regular oil. But in a place where it's less common, then it would in fact be also. Refuah-wise, yes, it has healing properties, but because the same way as you're allowed to use regular oil, the same way in a place where rose oil is easily gotten, then you would be allowed to use that also. Well, I mean, you may be using it for refuah, but the point is it's not obvious to everybody else that you're doing it for refuah. Okay, Tosfos brings a girsa over here that actually means there's a three-way machlokas. You have one opinion would be you're never allowed to use it, even in a place where it's commonly used, unless maybe if you're a prince, that would be the Tanakhama. You'd have Rav Shimon who would say it's always mutter, and you'd have Rav who would be saying that it depends whether it's common or not. Okay, so now we're going to talk about more malachas of Shabbos. This is going to be actually really the last perek that's going to talk in it, that's going to talk about individual malachas of Shabbos. After that, we're going to be dealing with various other dinim that are outgrowths of the malachas. Some of them d'araisa, some of them d'rabbanan, but not really going into detail about any one particular malacha. Okay, so here we're going to talk about the malachas of kosher and matir, tying and untying knots. Now we learned earlier that where they do tying and untying in the Mishkan. So Rashi quotes over here that they would tie knots if while they were weaving the curtains of the Mishkan, if one of the threads broke, they would tie the two broken ends back together, and obviously that's never going to be untied. As far as untying, we said over there that the people who are trapping the chilazin using nets would have they would tie ropes onto their nets, and sometimes Sometimes they would untie. Sometimes they would untie the ropes in order to make the net larger or smaller, or in order to take ropes from one net and attach them to a different one. So therefore, so those are the malachas of kosher and matzid. That's because they needed the chalazin. They needed the dye from the chalazin, the tchelas. So that's what it is. Actually, so I mean, the Gemara actually discusses over there that you don't even need the case where a swing broke. Just the case involving the people who are trapping the chalazin itself. You have them tying ropes onto one net and untying them sometimes from there onto another one. So why does Rashi have to mention over here the case of the people weaving the curtains? The Tanakh Tzedek talks about it actually in his Chedushim and says because there's a difference between a knot that's never meant to be undone versus one where you're tying it, not intending to ever untie it, but conceivably it might happen in the future that you might. For example, so the ones on the curtains, if they tie a knot over there because the swing's broke, definitely that knot is never going to be untied. There's never a reason to. As opposed to with the knots on the nets. Usually you're not going to, because once you put swings on the net, you're going to continue using the net long term. But once in a while, it could happen that you untie them from one to the other for whatever reason. So therefore, Rashi preferred to use the example where you have a knot that's made permanently and never meant to be untied, because that's the kind that Gemara is going to discuss over here, is the kind that's also Daraisa. So the Mishnah starts with, Ve'elu k'shorim shechayavin aleihem, the following kinds of knots a person is chayev on a daraisa level for, kesher hagamolim v'kesher asaponim, the knot that's made by camel drivers and the knot that's made by sailors. So we're going to see in the Gemara what knots those are. And the Mishnah continues, uchshem shu chayev akishoran, with those kinds of knots, just like you chayev for tying them, kachu chayev alateran, so also you chayev for untying them. Reb Meir says, here's a rule, kol kesher shu yocholat tire ba'achas miyodav, any knot that you could untie one-handed, because in other words, it's not a tight knot, ein chayav and all of you wouldn't be chayav for it on Shabbos, because since it's not a tight knot, so it's obviously not meant to be a permanent knot. There are Rishonim who learn that Rav Meir is not arguing with the Tanakhama, but rather giving another detail, and that the halacha might be like him. Most other Rishonim learn that knot, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that no, there's no difference between a tight knot and a loose knot. It depends, basically, as we're going to see in the Gemara today and tomorrow, that it depends on first of all, was it meant to be a permanent or semi-permanent knot, and also according to some Rishonim, was it a special kind of knot that only professionals made. So we'll get into those points. So the Gemara asks, my keshra gamolin, the keshra sapanin, what do we mean by the knot that's made by camel drivers and by sailors? Now you have like this. With a camel, you have they make a hole in the camel's nose, in the septum between the two nostrils. They put in there a ring. which is knotted and kept in there permanently. Once you put it in, there's almost never a reason to take it out. And then to that, you tie another rope, which they use when they're leading the camel around. They'll lead the camel by that rope. And then when they don't need it, then they'll untie it. But they might leave it on the camel for a couple of days at a time. Same thing with the boat. You have, Rashi explains, there's a hole near the front end of the boat into which they put a ring, which stays there, which they tie, and a ring of rope, which they tie and keep that there permanently. And then when they want to dock the boat or when they want to anchor the boat or whatever, then they tie a rope to that and they have the anchor at the other end or they tie it to the things on the dock over there. So that kind of rope, again, the first one that's in the hole is there permanently. The other one is attached to it sometimes, but not always. So that's the Gemara's asking, my keshra gamon and keshra saponim. Ilema kitra de katri bezmama, the kitra de katri beisturida. Do you mean the knot that they attach to the ring in the animal's nose, and the knot that they attach to the ring in the boat? Hi, kasher shayna shokayama. What do you mean? That's not a permanent knot. If we're learning from the Mishkan, if they had a swing broke while they're weaving the cloth, and they tied the two ends together, that's never going to be untied. And even the ones with the nets are not meant to be untied in general. It could happen. It could happen as a rare thing that they have to, but in general they don't plan to when they first tie it. So how can you be chayev? So in this case over here, the one that you attach to the camel's nose ring or the one that you attach to the ship's ring, how could that be considered a kesher shokayama if you only do it for a few days at a time? No, what we mean is the knot of the actual of the actual ring in the nose or the actual ring in the ship. That knot is tied permanently and never meant to be undone. So therefore, that would be the kind that if a person ties it on Shabbos, then he's chayiv darai. Then he's chayiv darai. He's chayiv. We said in the Mishnah, a mayor or a mekol kesher holder. A mayor says that any knot that you could untie one hand is if you're allowed to untie on Shabbos. Boy, Rabbi Chadboy, Achui, the Maracha, Rabbi Chadboy, the brother of Maracha, asked the question, a nivol and a mayor magu. What about a coin to a mayor? What would be the din about a bow tie? The question is, Taimi did a mayor mishum to Yochala Tira Ba'achim to Yadaru. The question is Reb Meir's basic idea that you're allowed to untie any knot that you could untie one-handed? Baha Nami Yochala Tira. A bow tie you can also untie one-handed because you pull out one end and the whole knot comes apart. Or Duma, Taimi did a mayor mishum to Lemahadik. Maybe Reb Meir's reason in the Mishnah has to do with the fact that a regular knot, not a bow tie, a regular double knot, let's say, that you could untie one-handed, is obviously not tied very tightly in the first place. On the other hand, Bahama Hadek, as opposed to a bow knot, is tied very tightly. So in other words, maybe the mayor is saying only a knot that's loose enough to be untied with one hand is mutter, but not a bow tie, which in and of itself is tight. It's just it's shaped in such a way, the loops are made in such a way that you can easily untie it. Unless it's teku, so we don't know. We're gonna get back to this matter of bow ties later on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel on Shabbos. That's a shame. We're gonna deal with this question about whether you're allowed to tie bow ties when you are and aren't allowed to tie bow ties on Shabbos. Okay. Stop here, I guess. Shkayach, everyone.